Listener supported.
Community Radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Leanne Jossend.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019.
So I filed this morning, and happy to say that I am officially a candidate for mayor, and I am excited to get started, and I'll be starting right away knocking on doors.
Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge announced last night that she will challenge incumbent Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton in this year's mayoral election. In today's feature report, Barge speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about her candidacy and what she wants to bring to the mayor's office. That's coming up later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, part two about smart homes and devices on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
An Indiana politician has thrown their hat in the ring for the 2020 presidential race. WFHB correspondent Rasha Kamhawi brings us that report.
Peter Buttigieg, Democratic mayor of South Bend, announced today he is launching a presidential exploratory committee. The committee is traditionally used to help potential candidates determine whether or not to run for office. Announcing the formation of the committee is used by modern candidates to soft launch their presidential aspirations. If he decides to run, the 37-year-old South Bend mayor would be the first openly gay presidential candidate. Buttigieg has not formally filed campaign records with the Federal Election Commission as a presidential candidate. Buttigieg announced the formation of his exploratory committee through social media this morning. In a YouTube message, he specifically addressed the LGBTQ community.
I belong to a generation that provided most of the troops in the wars after 9/11 that's going to be experiencing climate change in an extremely serious way. It's the generation that stands to be the first to make less than our parents if something doesn't change, but also the first generation to know marriage equality as the norm, and perhaps the first generation where someone can announce a campaign for president with his husband at his side.
Buttigieg was elected South Bend mayor in 2011. At 29 years old, he was the youngest mayor of a U.S. city. During his campaign for a second term in 2015, he came out. As of today, 8 candidates have announced they will be running in the 2020 presidential race. For WFHB, I'm Rasha Kamhawi.
City of Bloomington and Monroe County officials have approved the first expenditures of the food and beverage tax. The 1% tax on prepared foods went into effect in February of last year to provide funding for the Monroe County Convention Center expansion. Yesterday, the Food and Beverage Tax Advisory Board approved using the tax to hire an architect for the project. Officials say they do not know yet exactly how much the architect's fee will be, but Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Reniason told the board, typically, architects' fees are 5 to 10% of a project's construction cost. The expansion has been estimated to cost between $30 to $40 million.
If you wanted to kind of think of this in a range, 5 to 10% of 30 million would be roughly what the maximum, minimum, maximum the architect fees could be. So that's $1.5 to $3 million for the architect fees. And that's what it's going to end up probably being, somewhere in there.
Reniason told the advisory board that the city has already collected more than $2 million from its portion of the food and beverage tax. He told the board he sees the city being able to cover the architect fees as more tax proceeds come in. The Bloomington City Council will also have to sign off on the expense. Under a memorandum of understanding between the city and the county, the City Council is the contracting body for the project. At the county's request, the advisory board also approved using the food and beverage tax for other expenses. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell explained the request.
We know that there's going to be survey work required. We know that there's going to be some appraisals required. And we're pretty sure there's going to be some environmental requirements as well. All right, we're going to have to do those kind of studies as we move through this process.
For example, Cockrell says he's currently exploring the possibility of the county buying the property where High Speed Tire is now located.
They're interested in selling that property. It's in that geographic area, and if we can work out an agreement with them, we intend to go to the commissioners and say, hey, can I get an appraisal on that? I've got a quote for the appraisal and things like that. And so we would move forward, again, with county council's appropriation to use these funds to do that, because ultimately, if we do purchase that, it's anticipated that that would be used for convention center purposes.
Deputy Mayor Reniason told the board they can expect to see more funding requests, which are currently being refined. Over the past year, the food and beverage tax has generated about $2.5 million. The city of Bloomington takes 90% of that, a little over $2 million. The county's portion of the food and beverage tax is a little over $300,000.
The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission is asking for more information from two vendors vying to oversee redevelopment of the old IU Health Hospital site. The Hospital Reuse Steering Committee heard presentations from the companies Browning and Trinitas last month. The two companies are finalists in the city's search for a company to redevelop the Bloomington Hospital site on 2nd Street. Yesterday, the city's Economic and Sustainability Director, Alex Crowley, proposed the Redevelopment Commission to skip the presentations for themselves, since the respondents would be repeating their December presentations. Crowley said he could, quote, streamline the process.
What we decided to do, and the fact that they would be giving exactly the same presentation, what we thought we would do was to take input from the advisory committee and then come to you with a staff recommendation based on that, and then have that discussion at that point rather than have them just do a dog and pony show, a repeat of what they did before.
Now, some Redevelopment Commission members have not seen the developers' December presentations. Commission President Don Griffin said that, as the body that will approve any master developer contract, the RDC heard from potential contractors.
I think maybe if there were 10 different vendors, then yes, I think we would want you to condense that. But since there's only two, then you'll be coming to us to write a check based on your decision, and we as a group wouldn't have seen the other proposal.
Griffin has already seen the presentations more than once, but he said he'd happily sit through them again, given the importance and size of the redevelopment project, which encompasses 24 acres in Bloomington's downtown. Crowley said the presentations were not recorded, but said written documentation about both groups' qualifications is available to the commission. Commission member Sue Scambarelli said she'd still like to hear a presentation.
I think I can make a better decision when it comes to our up or down vote if I've at least been able to spend some time and ask questions of these individuals.
Crowley estimates the presentations will last about 15 minutes and be followed by a 10-minute Q&A session. The Redevelopment Commission went on to approve a change to its lease agreement with the Monroe County Convention Center Management Company for the Convention Center parking lot. The city owns the lot and has taken back some parking spaces for use by permit holders who are displaced while the 4th Street parking garage is being repaired. Assistant City Attorney Larry Allen said the lease will be reduced to compensate the Convention Center Management Company for the loss.
Initially, this is a lease that's worth about $18,000 per year. That for just 2019, that would change to $7,392.
The commission also voiced support for a new city effort to improve garbage cans in downtown Bloomington. Allen said the solar trash compactors currently in use are problematic and need to be replaced.
We had installed solar trash compactors and recycling compactors. And essentially, ever since those were originally installed, they have almost continuously been breaking down on us and required repair. So this essentially would beautify the downtown, make a uniform trash and recycling receptacles with these brand new, they're metal, they'd be painted green to match the benches that we have downtown. They have dual side accessibility, which makes them easier to empty. And more importantly, they don't have mechanical pieces and motorized pieces that are subject to breaking down.
Allen assured the commission that, as a public improvement, the garbage receptacles are an approved use of TIF dollars.
Hoosier Hills Food Bank announced today they are beginning to hear reports of federal employees now in need of access to food pantries due to the ongoing government shutdown. The Monroe County-based food pantry, in a press release today, stated they are taking precautions and reaching out to other agencies to determine if an ongoing shutdown will increase food supply demand. So far, Hoosier Hills has stated they have not seen increased demand on their pantry. The federal government shutdown has already affected food stamp beneficiaries in Indiana. Earlier this month, the Family and Social Services Administration announced an early distribution of SNAP benefits. The FSSA stated they will not provide food stamps during February. The government shutdown is now in its 33rd day. It is the longest federal government shutdown in U.S. history. The Hoosier Hills Food Bank has announced they will be accepting additional food donations as they prepare for a possible increase in clientele. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Leanne Jossend.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B Line. Cardinal Spirits Kitchen features local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street.
Last fall, Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge announced the formation of an exploratory committee to look into a possible run for Bloomington mayor. Last night at Upland Brewery in Bloomington, Barge announced she will run. The county commissioner will challenge incumbent mayor John Hamilton in this spring's Democratic primary. WFHB News Director Wes Martin sat down with Barge to talk about her decision to run and what she's heard from area residents during her so-called listening tour of Monroe County.
This is WFHB News Director Wes Martin, and I am joined in the studio by Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge. Ms. Barge, you recently embarked on a listening tour across Monroe County and Bloomington to try to figure out what are some of the concerns of area residents trying to inform whether or not you should run for Bloomington mayor against incumbent Democratic Bloomington mayor John Hamilton. What have you heard, first of all? And then we can talk a little bit more about your decision. And just wondering, what have you heard from area residents and what are areas of concern?
Sure. So I started my listening tour several months ago, and after being asked to run for mayor by people out in the community, and I decided to do the listening tour to kind of get a handle on what people thought about me running and also what their concerns were. And so the themes of what I've been hearing are just sort of asking for a change in culture of city government, improving kind of the quality of life, and just looking for a different kind of leadership. Those are the three kind of themes I've been hearing. Obviously, people are concerned about a lot of different issues, whether it be affordable housing, our environment, kind of climate change is a big one, and transportation and parking, all the issues that we all care about and improve our quality of life.
You had mentioned leadership. What in particular did you end up hearing, or how may that have informed your decision?
Sure. And so I think that what we're seeing at city government is sort of a top-down leadership style rather than a collaborative leadership style. So, and I'll just use the parking garage kind of as a good example. The parking garage on 4th Street was something that the administration, the city administration said, you know, we want a new parking garage. And I think where the communication breakdown occurred was between the administration and the city council. And the city council felt like, hey, we didn't have enough information from the city administration. And it's so important that you see those two bodies working together as a team. And so I think that's just a good example of how there's been this lack of collaboration and communication. It's not necessarily always about the policy, it's about the process. And so I think had city councilors felt like they were given more information and had more of a collaborative approach, we may have actually seen a new parking garage. I think that's the thing that sort of that stymies people is just it's the Bearcat, whether it's annexation, whether it's the overdose death data. All of those issues are examples where the city government isn't necessarily giving us the information beforehand.
So you have made a decision, and I'd love for you to, one, announce that decision, and then talk a little bit more about how this listening tour and 100 cups of coffee, how all of that has informed.
Sure. So I started out several months ago, like I said, doing the 100 cups of coffee, doing the business tour, doing the neighborhood parties. And my approach was, what do you want to see more of in our community? What do you want to see less of? And it wasn't necessarily to look for the answer, look for an answer ahead of time. It was to get an answer from the community. And so I would ask, you know, what do you think about me running against John Hamilton? And I got an overwhelming, please do run. We really want to have a choice. And so I made the decision to run because I feel like we deserve a choice in this community, and it's important. I definitely think that John Hamilton and I will have a different approach to issues. We'll have different ideas. And the most wonderful thing is when we get an opportunity to look at two candidates or even more and have a choice. And so I'm excited to give the voters a choice.
And so you have officially announced yesterday.
Yes.
You announced last night at Upland, and just when will you file or submit paperwork? And then what's next in this debate between local politics?
So I filed this morning, and happy to say that I am officially a candidate for mayor, and I am excited to get started, and I'll be starting right away knocking on doors. You might see me this weekend even. I'll be knocking on doors, and I'll be having house parties. I'll be out in the community, and I'll be doing some of the same things I've been doing on my exploratory committee, which is just having coffee with people, visiting your business, doing all the things that I've been doing, because it's been really helpful to me to be able to learn that whole idea of listening, learning, and then leading. And so it's an important process. Campaigns are about bringing your ideas forward, but it's also a fluid process. So as I'm learning more, I like to bring in people's ideas into my campaign.
And just to go back to what you had been mentioning earlier about it's less of a difference on policy and more of a difference on approach. Can you elaborate a little bit about that? In a national debate, you know, we're very used to very different policies, right? And each side lining up with their policies. But if the difference is not necessarily about which policies or projects should go forward, but about the approach to that, I think that that might be a little confusing for some people to think about or conceptualize.
Absolutely. So I do think we'll have some policy differences. I think already I'm noticing some policy differences. But you're right. So it is a little bit confusing, but I think it'll become clear as it goes on. But I think that you know, the way that I view government is that we have to be inclusive and we have to bring in as many voices as we can. And the way that I have seen John Hamilton govern is he often has the answer in his mind and then looks for people to sort of validate what it is that he wants. And I want to turn that upside down, and I want to be able to bring in more people. And you'll see that in my when you have conversations with me, you'll see that my record reflects that. And you'll see that, you know, his approach is extremely different. So we'll get a very different policy outcome. And, you know, you are going to hear us have different views. You know, I think you're going to hear us have different views on, say, broadband, for example. I think we should actually be revisiting that issue. And we ought to be looking at that as a county city collaboration. I think we can do that incrementally. There are things like, you know, we could have, I'm going to end the annexation lawsuit, you know, with the governor. I would immediately end that annexation lawsuit, and I would spend resources coming up with a memorandum of understanding with the county on how we move forward and grow our city and county together. So that's a pretty huge policy difference you're going to see. I want to do things like I want to have a city health clinic, and I want to collaborate with the county on that. So there are going to be a lot of things that I think we'll have differences on. Definitely process. We approach things very differently.
Commissioner Barge, anything else that you want folks to know either about your campaign or about this decision or 100 cups of coffee or any of your outreach?
I love coffee, and I'll have it anytime with you that you want to. And I want to thank all the people that kind of have reached out or opened their hearts to me and talked to me. It's been really amazing. And I want to continue doing that. You can visit bargeforbloomington.com and sign up to visit with me, or you can send me an email or whatever, check in with me. I want to hear from as many people as I can. I want to continue doing that. And I want to say thank you to Wes for having me on WFHB.
Commissioner Amanda Barge announcing her decision to run for Bloomington mayor against incumbent Democrat John Hamilton. Commissioner Barge, thank you so much for speaking with us. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Last time, we talked about the dangers of so-called smart speakers, the artificial intelligence programs that control a so-called smart home. Well, after that one was in the can, I came across one more story that's even scarier, and you've got to hear this one. In Germany, a man who uses Amazon's Alexa used the European Union's new privacy laws to request from Amazon all the information Amazon had accumulated about him. Among other things, they sent him 1,700 hours of audio recordings from somebody else's account. Now, that was a glitch in their system, and they apologized for the mistake, but what it reveals is this. Alexa listens to everything it hears all the time, just in case somebody might issue a command. And Alexa not only listens to everything, it records everything, transcribes the recordings, and stores them somewhere, apparently permanently. The recordings, as reported by CT Magazine and Gizmodo, included first and last names. They showed the user in the shower, in the bedroom, in the kitchen, and when examined, allowed the astonished listeners to identify the user by name and address. If that's not an exact realization of George Orwell's 1984, I don't know what is. But 35 years later, it's not fiction anymore. In other news, the government shutdown has spawned a ballooning number of scams. The Pennsylvania State Police have issued a public warning about emails, phone calls, and internet pop-ups that try to scare people into giving their personal information. Remember, even when it's working, the government doesn't get in touch with you unless you contact them first. The federal Do Not Call list has also been turned off, and robocall scammers are already mentioning the shutdown, especially when they give out bogus threats that you owe back taxes. And the Federal Trade Commission's consumer complaint system is one of the things that's shut down, so you'll have to report scams and swindles to local authorities. Now, here's a brand new word we all need to learn, pwned. It's spelled P-W-N-E-D, and it's pronounced pwned. It means to have power or mastery over someone. Video gamers have been using the expression for some time, but now it's becoming widespread, as in, Captain America pwned the Iron Man in that movie, or our team totally pwned the other guys. If your personal information has been stolen, whoever has it can pwn you. And it probably has, you know. A list was recently discovered on the dark web called simply Collection Number 1 that included almost 2.7 billion records involving over 773 million unique email addresses. You can find out if yours is among them at a new website, haveibeenpwned.com. That's all one word, haveibeenpwned.com. Heads up, spread the word, and beware. This kind of pwn is not corn. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break. Been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Rasha Kamhawi along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish, and our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today and executive producer, Wes Martin. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Leanne Johnson. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Hijabi Diaries, a series examining the experiences and issues facing Muslim women in Monroe County, the U.S., and beyond. The Hijabi Diaries are coming up next right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.